And I've known these people for so long. They've been married for 2 years, and they're just good people.
But Archbishop Vigano is the one up for excommunication? Tonight, MVP Hall of Famer Aaron Rodgers blasts the agenda of the globalists, while Dr. Fauci is thoroughly exposed in Senate hearings. Dr. Peter McCullough blows the whistle on what really happened since Pope Francis totally endorsed Dr. Fauci's agenda. Will the Pope have to pay the piper, finally? By the way, is Francis angry at Harrison Butker for his viral endorsement of the Latin Mass? Three bishops publicly thank Butker for speaking the truth, while the Pope plans to ban the Latin Mass and order Catholics to unite around the liturgy of Vatican II. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I am Michael Matt, and this is The Remnant Underground coming to you from remnant-tv.com, the place where truth is free at last. I don't need to tell you that the crackdown on free speech has kicked into high gear in this country in the run-up to the election. And actually, it's almost comical now, isn't it, how our globalist overlords are constantly accusing us of doing the very same thing that they do all day, every day. They tell us, for example, that they are so very concerned about mis and disinformation. All the way up in Davos, they've been warning that that's the number one, even more so than climate change, mis and disinformation. They're so shocked, shocked.
I'm shocked, shocked to find that gambling is going on in here.
You're winning, sir.
Oh, thank you very much.
Yet, that's their stock and trade, fake news, disinformation.
Still a pandemic of the unvaccinated.
The disease of the unvaccinated.
It is the unvaccinated who are the problem.
Period. End of story.
The unvaccinated also put our economy at risk.
This is a tyranny of the unvaccinated right now.
The unvaccinated, not the vaccinated, the unvaccinated. That's the problem.
That's the pandemic of the unvaccinated.
Pandemic of the unvaccinated.
All this is a pandemic of the unvaccinated.
The only pandemic we have is among the unvaccinated.
Now, you know, this has been 24/7 in cable news, so I don't need to go into it too much. But what's happening on the floor of the Senate right now in Congress in D.C. Is pretty amazing. I mean, every single conspiracy theory, all the reasons for which we were banned and deplatformed on Twitter and social media, it's all coming out now. And when I say we, I say informally, because I'm thinking about the doctors who were trying to speak out and who were silenced, the police officers, the military people who lost their jobs, all being totally exonerated right now in Washington, D.C. But it still just irks me that apparently, because he wears the white, Francis is going to get away with this, with what he did, with his role in what's being revealed now on the floor of these congressional hearings, right? I mean, he's the great hunter of mis and disinformation, isn't he, Pope Francis? But he, friends, and we can't forget this because he's going to do it again. He's been carrying water for the purveyors of this globalist fake news ever since he plopped himself down in the chair of St. Peter.
Since the Argentinian Archbishop became Pope, Francis has shifted the focus away from the church's conservative stance on things like abortion and made attacks on inequality and the excesses of capitalism central. For some, it's like Occupy Wall Street took over the Vatican.
This is just pure Marxism coming out of the mouth of the Pope.
You look back at that, it's like, does he realize? Is Francis giving up on it? I don't think so. He's just going to plow ahead. That's all he knows. That's all that Team Francis apparently knows how to do. Because we're seeing now that just about everyone who's awake is figuring out what happened.
Leave us alone.
Yeah, stop spying on me.
Yeah. Get off my computer. Get off my cameras. Get off my Ring camera. You know, take down all this stupid CCTV cameras everywhere that are watching everything. And because the next step to all of this, people don't realize this, and this is the facts, is China and what's going on there. And social credit scores and your entire life monitored. Like, that's where we're going.
He's not some rad trad spreading mis and disinformation because he's a conspiracy nut. This is Aaron Rodgers, friends. Super Bowl MVP. Quarterback, current quarterback now, for the he's not retired, and quarterback for the New York Jets. A regular guy. A rich regular guy, but a regular guy nonetheless. who simply has refused to put his brain on hold and who, like the traditional Catholics of the world, refused to comply with the Holy Father when it came to the order from on high that God wants us all to get vaccinated.
Overnight, the NFL fining the Green Bay Packers and star quarterback Aaron Rodgers for violating the league's COVID rules, hitting the franchise with a $300,000 penalty, and docking Rodgers and teammate Alan Lazard $14,650 each. The discipline stemming partly from this Halloween party that both unvaccinated players attended. The league adding the team failed to enforce protocols in a few instances, including Rodgers not wearing a mask during press conferences.
But I still want to go back to the story that we were talking about down here a couple of weeks ago. Everybody's still talking about it. And that is another football player, another future Hall of Famer, three-time Super Bowl winner, Harrison Butker. Because he was sounding a similar alarm, right? That whole incident has gone viral now. He was sounding a similar alarm about what? About what is happening inside the Catholic Church, the crisis inside the Catholic Church.
The chaos of the world is unfortunately reflected in the chaos in our parishes, and sadly, in our cathedrals too. As we saw during the pandemic, too many bishops were not leaders at all. They were motivated by fear of being sued, fear of being removed, fear of being disliked. They showed by their actions, intentional or unintentional, that the sacraments don't actually matter. Because of this, countless people died alone, without access to the sacraments, and it's a tragedy we must never forget.
And after that landed, after that happened, you had the usual neo-Catholic useful idiots with the gigantic microphones out there. Who does he think he is? You rad trash need to respect our bishops. Show a little respect. But this is where it gets fascinating. Because this is what we've been saying for such a long time. If people have the courage to speak out, you might be surprised by the results.
It should be noted that almost a third of Butker's speech, 1,095 out of 3,677 words, is devoted to criticism of bishops and priests. Rather than respond to these remarks with resentment, his recalling us to our high ideals while promising to pray and fast for bishops and priests are much appreciated.
The head of the diocese, Kansas City, St. Joseph, also weighed in. Bishop James Johnston said in part, quote, Harrison Butker's passion for his Catholic faith and his family are beautiful and well-known. And like most people, he also has strong opinions on where we are as a church and as a nation.
Thank you, Harrison, for speaking the truth, tweets Bishop Joseph Strickland. You are in my prayers. Absolute support for a young guy that comes out and says, bishops, be bishops, lead us, do the right thing. And that, friends, is pretty much the point of everything that we're doing down here in the Remnant Underground, to try to encourage our leaders to do the right thing. We want to fall in behind them. And this is an indicator that that's not pie in the sky wishful thinking. There are good bishops who are waking up. And so it's no wonder that Pope Francis, looking at that Butker speech, is trying to spin the whole thing as hateful fake news. He tweets out, we do not weave the fabric of human history by lumping together unverified information, repeating banal and falsely persuasive speeches, and shocking others with declarations of hatred. These actions, says the Holy Father, strip people of their dignity. Hashtag no to hate. And you wonder, is Francis actually talking about Harrison Butker's speech?
But not surprising to many of you should be my outspoken embrace of the traditional Latin Mass. I've been very vocal in my love and devotion to the TLM and its necessity for our lives. It is through the TLM that I encountered order and began to pursue it in my own life. The TLM is so essential that I would challenge each of you to pick a place to move where it is readily available.
Now, this is causing a stir on several levels, even among bishops who are among the better bishops. To be fair, some of these bishops are, I think, growing a little concerned about the fact that it looks like so many young and powerful and influential people want their mass back. They want their church back. Here's Bishop Barron.
That's the trouble, frankly, with some of the rad trad crowd. I think that, yes, they're angry. I get it. I'm angry, too, about these things. But you don't burn the house down. You direct your anger appropriately and prudently so that you can excise what's problematic. But that's why, like, an attack on the Second Vatican Council, That's burning the house down. Because you burn down Second Vatican Council, what's going to stop you from burning down the Council of Trent or the Council of Nicaea or Chalcedon? What's going to stop you? As I've said before, you've adopted a fundamentally Protestant ecclesiology.
With the whole world blowing up all around us, who cares about Vatican II anymore? Who cares? I mean, I'm a cradle Catholic, all my life Catholic, right? I don't care. It's like Woodstock. Woodstock would have been really cool, I suppose, if I were a hippie, if I lived through it, you know, all right, free love, tune in, tune out, the whole bit. But now, it's what was the point of it all? Even Pope Benedict admitted that some councils now are just a monumental waste. He's talking about history, in history. Some councils have been a monumental waste of time, says Joseph Ratzinger, the future Pope Benedict XVI.
25 years after the opening, Joseph Cardinal Ratzinger, the future Pope Benedict XVI, would write, quote, "Not every valid council in the history of the Church has been a fruitful one. In the last analysis, many of them have been just a waste of time. The last word about the historical value of Vatican Council II has yet to be spoken," end quote.
This council created many calamities. So many problems, so much misery in reality. Seminaries closed, convents closed, the liturgy was banalized, and the true council has struggled to materialize.
Vatican II was not a success, was it? Churches have closed all over the place. The liturgy was banalized, as Pope Benedict XVI said. Seminaries closed, everything blew up, right? Vatican II was an unmitigated disaster by every leading indicator we can find. So Francis tells us, 70 years after Vatican II, that we all need to unify beneath the council and the liturgy which it spawned. Which, because one of the things that we get accused of is y'all go out and find clown masses or some crazy mass, and you say, that's the Novus Ordo mass. That's not fair. Well, I agree. That's not fair. So let's look at a very mainstream Novus Ordo mass, one conducted, one that was celebrated by Cardinal Sean O'Malley, one that was celebrated for the ordination of priests in Boston. This is what the Novus Ordo that's supposed to unite us all, this is officially, this is what it looks like. Now, as a cradle Catholic all my life, educated 12 years in Catholic schools, forgive my French, but I have no idea what the hell is going on there. So how would it ever unify me or anyone who grew up Catholic? But what is that? I don't know what that is. I don't believe that Cardinal O'Malley knows what the hell is going on there, quite frankly. Look at his face. He looks about as baffled as everybody else. And yet somehow, according to Francis, this is the type of thing that will unify us, you see. While the 2,000-year-old Catholic liturgy of the Catholic Church is divisive. The Mass that dates back 1,500 years or more, the Mass that Pope John Paul would have offered for most of his priestly life, that's divisive. The Mass that Pope Francis himself probably would have attended for his first communion and other early sacraments, divisive. The Mass of every saint in history is divisive. So apparently, the traditional Catholic faith and liturgy is simply a problem for these guys running the Vatican right now. Because they're trying to erase it. They're trying to cancel it. Remember what Pope Benedict said, it can't possibly be wrong. 2,000 years of liturgical history and patrimony can't be wrong. What are we doing? Let's try to benefit from it. Let's try to have mutual benefit from the old and the new, right? Because there's only one Mass, as Benedict. He tried to reconcile it, didn't he? And not so for Francis. He just condemns the whole thing as divisive. And you're telling me that we traditional Catholics are the ones with the beef here. We're the problem. We're making stuff up. While the Pope is trying to ban the mass of Padre Pio and Father Colby. And meanwhile, he's doing that back at the Church of Accompaniment Ranch. It's the Jimmy Martin Show.
Now look at the Pope's face. check that out. Francis just lights up like a Christmas tree at the very sight of Father Jimmy Martin. You know, Father Jimmy Martin, who says that two dudes who are married are just good people.
And I've known these people for so long. They've been married for 2 years, and they're just good people. They've been married for 2 years, and they're just good people. And they're just good people.
Now, that's okay. But Archbishop Carla Maria Vigano needs to be excommunicated. Right? That's what we're talking about now, this week, in the middle of Sodom and Gomorrah and Armageddon and the world blowing up from war and every other catastrophe you can think of. Well, we're going to have to do something about Archbishop Vigano. Archbishop Vigano has been summoned to a Vatican tribunal on a charge of schism. And if he does not show up for trial by June 28, 2024, he will be judged in his absence. Got it. Friends, let me pause here. Let's just man to man, right? You and me. Let's just be honest about this. Archbishop Vigano and I had a difference of opinion, a strategic difference of opinion last year, right? Everybody was aware of it after having been friends for a long time. I'm among the very few, anyway, who actually knows him personally, who's met him personally, and he and I were friends, right? So this is tough. This is not easy. The division that's set in between us is a strategic difference, right? But the thing is, the real villain of the peace is not Archbishop Vigano. It's not me. It's not you. It's not any of the scattered sheep, the sheep who include bishops and cardinals who are like, what is going on? Completely scattered by the fact that the shepherd has been struck. He struck himself, right? So this whole thing is all about how absolutely cataclysmic the crisis in the church actually is. That you have a prince of the church, a priest, a bishop for 50 years in loyal service to the Church of Vatican II, right? To the Novus Ordo, who finally sees at the end, my gosh, I don't know what this is anymore, right? This is why you've seen no attack pieces from me on Archbishop Vigano, even though I disagreed with him last year publicly, because everyone's trying to figure this out right now. And good people, good men, need to not anathematize each other as we try to figure this out, even when we have strong disagreements. So I will not throw Archbishop Vigano under the bus to appease Team Francis. Archbishop Vigano, no doubt about it, most of what he says is right over the target, and that's the problem. He's much closer to being on the side of the angels than the folks who want to burn him at the stake are right now. I disagree with strategy, yes, because I believe declaring Francis is the anti-pope and doing all this stuff puts us right where Francis wants us. It makes Francis very happy to make these gigantic declarations that that are very divisive. It's exactly what Francis wants. He wants us all out of the church. He wants to be able to say, I excommunicate Archbishop Vigano, and the world goes, well, yeah, I guess he had it coming. And he says you're not the Pope, calls you Bergoglio. He says you're a gay guy who was, diddling seminarians. You see? Saying things that we can't prove, saying things that you maybe, that we can't prove. Well, that puts the world on Francis's side. This is the problem with the strategy. Now, I personally believe that Team Francis are guilty of crimes against God and humanity that do not need to be exaggerated right now. It makes it counterproductive, in fact, to accuse them of things which we cannot prove. Do you see what I'm saying? It's a strategic decision. Go after what we know, what we can prove, and we win. Start wandering into supposition, not using footnotes, not citing sources when we say things, then they win. You see, that's how I see it. Now, he's an archbishop. Maybe he has an entirely different way of looking. That's fine. That's fine. But that's the nature of the difference. And I do hope, by the way, I hope, Your Excellency, if you're listening, I'm praying for you, and I really do hope that you go to Rome and that you confront your accusers in the public forum. Make this as big as you can possibly make it. Expose them for what they're doing, what they're actually doing. Go for it. And I'll cover every word of it. Go to Rome. Now, leaving all that aside that I just said, We can all get behind condemning, in no uncertain terms, the obvious double standard that is at work here. Because that's another slam dunk on our part. Much of what we do has to be about what the world is seeing and how they're reacting to what's happening in the Catholic Church, even the non-Catholic world. Looking at this, looking at the McCarrick situation, looking at all the horrific things that are happening in the church, and the world looks at Francis, and Francis is excommunicating Archbishop Vigano? What? Because he overstated a few things? Really? So this goes back to the Peronist expression, for his friends, everything. For his enemies, the law. That's how Francis looks at things, right? And Archbishop Vigano, obviously, is Francis's enemy. Whereas this psychotic, sex-abusing freak is Francis's friend.
Just to recap for our viewers, Rupnik, now 69, is accused of sexually and psychologically abusing at least 20 women for nearly two decades at a convent in Slovenia.
This is simply demonic.
Rupnik was briefly excommunicated, Father Berg, in 2020 for absolving one of his victims of having relations with him. And then he was reinstated after supposedly repenting formally. Then last June, he's expelled from the Jesuits only to be reincarnated to the Diocese of Slovenia in October. Why does the Vatican and the church at large seem so willing to turn a blind eye to this abuse?
But when it comes to Archbishop Vigano, off with his head. You see the double standard? Even though Vigano now is an elderly gentleman who served the church faithfully all of his life at 83 years old, guess what? He's a little cranky, isn't he? So what? Lots of old people say cranky things, right? But you see, the Vatican cannot leave Archbishop Vigano alone. And you know why not? Because they're in the middle right now of using the full weight of their authority in the church to canonize the revolution of Vatican II. Now, remember what I'm saying here. The revolution of Vatican II. The documents. The revolution of Vatican II. And if you don't know the difference, you need to find out what the difference is, because they're not talking again about the documents. They're talking about the revolution, the spirit of Vatican II, right? Which has been compared to the French Revolution, even by some of their own, like Archbishop Suens, Cardinal Suens. Okay, so they've canonized that revolution by using the canonization formula to make saints out of all the folks responsible for the Vatican II Revolution, the post-conciliar popes, all, of course, except for one. I guess which one won't be canonized. So, too, now they've got to anathematize anyone, especially any prelate, who dares to defend tradition, who dares to defend the traditional teachings of the church, the moral teaching of the church, certainly the liturgical teachings of the church, absolutely the dogma, extra ecclesia nulla sala. Oh, no, no. Anybody who says that you need to convert to the Catholic Church in order to be saved, as the church is infallibly taught, well, that person, whether he be Lefebvre, Vigano, Strickland, doesn't matter who, the Vatican must give that person one of those little asterisks, right? We call it the Savonarola asterisk for being a renegade, a schismatic, a rebel who ended up excommunicated. See what they're doing? They think long-term, friends. They think long-term. It's like, well, like the Freemasons do. They think in terms of centuries, not years. It's just there's some similarities there. I'm not sure why. But they think long-term, you know? And they want history to look back and say there was no serious opposition whatsoever to this organic hermeneutic of continuity between what happened for 1,965 years in the Catholic Church and what came after Vatican II. No, there was nothing. Oh, there were a few people, but they were immediately excommunicated. They were very bad. They were the villains of the era, don't you know? You see what's going on here, right? Rewriting history. A change in history. They're waging a revolution. And Vigano, by the way, was one of them for 50 years, right? And he called out, the expression that he uses, and there's another place where I very much agree with him, he calls what they're doing a systematic destruction of the church. Yeah, that's what it is, isn't it? How many churches are closed in your neighborhood? They're closing down all over the world, aren't they? Whew, this Vatican II thing is working out great. Mass church closing, mass defections. Francis says we need to be united with the rest of the Catholics in the church today, right? statistically, 80% of those Catholics no longer go to Mass. So when he says he wants us to be totally and fully united with the full body of the church, is he referring to the folks who've left the church? Because most of them have. Not going to Mass anymore. You see? All he's saying is don't go to the Latin Mass, because there's where you might actually keep the faith. So Vigano goes on to say that Francis is in lockstep with the globalist agenda. People get upset about that. Well, a lot of the good bishops are saying that. We've been saying that for years and years and years, right? We said that in our most popular video ever, the one we did on Davos, which has like 30 million views. The reason YouTube started shutting us down, in fact. That's what we said. So I may have my strategic differences with His Excellency. Yeah, you all know about that, right? But is Vigano wrong when he says this? When he says and he points out that globalism calls for ethnic substitution, right? Well, Team Francis promotes uncontrolled immigration. You see it every day. If you don't see it, then follow him on Twitter. That's what he's mostly concerned about. No borders. The other, right? Globalism supports LGBT BS ideology, right? Well, Team Francis authorizes the blessing of same-sex couples. Why do you think that is? Globalism imposes the green agenda on the entire world. Well, Team Francis promulgates wacky encyclicals and never shuts up about climate change. Globalism wants to vaccinate the whole world, even still, right? Francis, friends, used the full weight of his office to cajole 2 billion Catholics to comply with that. And people are dying all over the world now, reportedly, because of that.
Dennis Rancourt at Montreal estimated midsummer of 2023, worldwide 17 million vaccine deaths. And now a paper out of the Netherlands by Mostert and colleagues, just through 2022, 42 countries had that estimate at 3 million.
While he chases Archbishop Vigano around the Vatican and tries to ban the Latin Mass, I think he's hoping Francis, Team Francis, let's say, they're hoping that we forget. Francis told the whole world that we all have a moral obligation before God to get vaccinated.
È dunque importante che possa proseguire lo sforzo per immunizzare quanto più possibile la popolazione. Cura della salute rappresenta un obbligo morale.
I'm sorry to say this, friends. I know you don't want to hear this. I don't want to say it. But from what we're seeing now, millions of people are either sick or dead because they listened to the Pope in Rome, Francis.
The Vatican has opened an international conference to discuss the role of the mind, body, and soul in the future of healthcare. It features conversations from leaders in the humanities and scientific communities, such as Dr. Anthony Fauci. Albert Bourla is the CEO of Pfizer, the first company to produce an effective vaccine against COVID-19. He says the rapid development of mRNA technology will lead to further breakthroughs in the medical field. Throughout the pandemic, Pope Francis has repeatedly called for universal vaccine distribution among the world's poorest countries. He will close the conference with a message for all of the participants.
Sarebbe triste se questo vaccino diventasse proprietà di tale o quale nazione, non sia universale e per tutti.
Other speakers include Chelsea Clinton, Cindy Crawford, and the lead guitarist of Aerosmith, Joe Perry.
Now you tell me, what is this other than a reckless abuse of the Petrine office? I mean, think about it. In the name of forcing compliance with the maniacal agenda of Bill Gates and Klaus Schwab, friends. So now that it's all blowing up, it's little wonder that last week's EU parliamentary elections backfired on Team Francis and really amounted to a full-scale rejection of everything that Francis stands for. You're looking at a new article there from Vatican journalist, longtime journalist and Vaticanista, John Allen. He certainly is no rad trad, and yet he writes, quote, "Less than a week after Pope Francis called on people to recognize migrants as a living image of God's people on their way to the eternal homeland, voters across Europe dealt a serious blow to that vision by rewarding far-right anti-immigrant parties in elections for the European Parliament. Pope Francis has repeatedly warned against the rise of the very sort of nationalist and populist forces who scored major gains." So what's my point? Never interrupt your enemy when he's making a mistake. Pope Francis has jumped the shark. He's making a mistake. Let him continue, right? We don't have to be divided over how we're going to quite categorize this guy, right? Forget whether this guy is still the Pope or not. We can't figure that out. We're not going to come to an agreement on that. We need to stay united and let him keep doing what he does best, which is exposing the revolution. He's the greatest recruiter traditional Catholics have ever had. I got to write him a letter of thanks at some point. Thank you for waking people up all over the world, Holiness, about what this is really all about, a revolution in the church. So don't let these things divide us. Unite against this. Unite against Team Francis. Unite against the agenda of Francis, as the entire EU just did at the voting polls. The whole world is beginning to wake up. There's an expression that I always got a kick out of. It's patience in time. It comes from the War and Peace. Tell stories of War and Peace. Patience and time are the strongest of all warriors. This was attributed to the Russian general Kutuzov before he defeated Napoleon, basically by sort of pulling back and letting Napoleon, his aggression and his arrogance, do the rest. Patience and time. Time and patience. And in our case, patience, time, and prayer. That's it. And you stay in the church to do all three. You unite the clans in opposing what's happening. And you let Francis, if anybody's going to leave the church, let Francis run himself out of the church. Because there are a lot of people, even in the hierarchy, who are looking at this guy and going, what is he? What's he doing? So honestly, at the next conclave, do you think there's going to be a huge hankering to become Francis II? Do you think? I'll close on this. Remember this. Francis and his revolutionary friends, right? His globalist friends, call them what you will, they always think in terms of the long game, as I just said. They think in terms of centuries, not years, certainly not months. They're thinking way ahead here. And we have to learn to do the same thing as a counter-revolutionary force inside the church, as the loyal opposition inside the church. Think long term. You got to be in this to win it. So many times, people, the blindfolds come off. People recognize they're, oh my gosh, there's a crisis in the church. They come in and they're all full of vim and vigor for the Latin Mass. And then they start saying it like it is and going further and further. And pretty soon they go out the back door and they start their own church somewhere and they go into obscurity and they're part of the problem, not the solution. Don't let that happen to you ever. Because the thing is, they've been at this for a long time. They still haven't succeeded and they're never going to succeed. These guys literally have been at it all my life, but even long before that. And here I'm on the screen right now. Here's images, very flickering images, old images, video of my own confirmation back in 1976 when my father, who you also see on the screen right now, he's walking there next to Archbishop Lefebvre. Fairly interesting footage. I was just a little kid already aware that something monumental had happened to the church. In fact, that's me on the screen right now, the day that Archbishop Lefebvre confirmed me. So I remember, it's vague, but I remember specifically living through this. I remember what we lost. I remember what it is that we're fighting for.
Why do you travel all this distance to do it again?
Well, because, there's no real the traditional center in this town, and all these people are traditionalists who otherwise wouldn't have the traditional ceremony for the Palm Sunday, you see.
But why can't you borrow a church here to do it in?
That's another question. I think many times they've tried to get a church or chapel for their services, but so far it's not been allowed. I think it's the bishop, at least the late bishop, had left instructions that there are no chapel or church was to be made over for the use of the traditionalists, many empty ones, not serving anything at all, but not available for us.
That's a European disgrace, that these two faithful Catholics can't have their mass said in a Catholic church in modern France. It's had to be Roman religion in our times as if in persecuted times in an unmarked hall.
No, I never had the honor of meeting Father Montgomery Wright. I know some people who did, but I never did. But you know what? I feel like I know him. And the reason I feel like I know him from that clip that you just saw is because I grew up at the feet of priests just like him. I met so many priests. They literally came to our home, to my father's house, to the home chapel in the basement to say Mass. I wish I had more video of this, because there's video going way back into the 70s of that happening. I keep showing this one, which is a little bit more recent, but you get the idea. Literally, there was an altar in my boyhood home in the basement where these priests would come and save the faith of children like us, right? Now, they weren't starting in their own church. They prayed for the Pope at every Mass. They weren't planning on doing anything long term, but they quite literally saved families like ours during the worst of the troubles, the worst of the crisis, right? Today, thanks be to God, every one of my father and mother's 100 and whatever it is now, 50, 160 children and grandchildren has kept the old faith because of priests like that, priests who refused to comply. Now, they didn't make any dramatic proclamations. They didn't set themselves up as bishops and popes. They were just simple priests who, like the priests of the Vendée or the priests of the Cristero, said, gotta have the Mass, gotta have the sacraments until this storm passes. Not forever. They weren't interested in starting their own church. They just kept the faith until the situation improved, which it did. Many of them would later on take advantage of Ecclesia Dei, take advantage of Archbishop Lefebvre, Society of St. Pius X, God bless him, take advantage of the Fraternity of St. Peter, take advantage finally of Summorum Pontificum. Many, many took advantage of that, which is one of the reasons Francis is so upset, because the Latin Mass was storming back, taking over the church, and soon would have if he hadn't crushed it, at least partially so far. Now, if those days that I'm talking about, those days are coming back now, well, thank God, friends, we know how to do this. We've done it before.
I've got altogether 16 kilometers of parish here, three parishes amalgamated, and really long distances. So there you are. I've got the car, and I'm using it all the time and do so many thousand kilometers in a year. There are, I suppose, an equal number of people in each parish, about between 300 and 400, altogether just over 1,000 souls to look after.
But the performance is not for the audience. It's not theatre. He's a priest, and he does it, he says the Latin word, the old form for his God.
And I know many diocesan priests right now who feel exactly the same as he did. 40 years ago. Some of them write for The Remnant, in fact. One of them wrote this just yesterday in this newspaper, in The Remnant. Father Chalatius writes, quote, I recently had two Novus Ordo funerals of devout Catholics in their 90s who had raised all their children in the faith, including education in parish schools. At these funerals, there were at least 80 family members present, spanning three generations. Out of 80 children and grandchildren, only 4 of them are still practicing the Catholic faith. And Father concludes, he says, and in the face of such damning data, Rome refuses to accept the obvious conclusion that Vatican II reforms have caused this, end quote. You see what I'm saying, friends? Don't give up on diocesan priests. These guys are on the front line. I know dozens and dozens of them personally, and many of them are going to hold the Catholic ground. Just watch and see them do it, because they're fed up like we are, like many bishops are. Many good bishops are done now. They're done with this, right? It's becoming so obvious of what's going on that they're saying, you know what, it's either Christ or this. I'm going to stay with Christ. So wait for the bishops. They already are. They already are coming over. They already are beginning to lead, aren't they? So let me close with this. Maybe it'll be useful. I don't know. Maybe helpful on some level. I'm the father of 7 children. Now, when my kids were real little, I remember thinking when I'd go to the mall or the grocery store or whatever, I remember thinking that the kids walk pretty slowly. And if I keep even half an eye on them, I'm not going to lose them at the mall or wherever. They'll be okay. I'll be able to catch them before they wander off. And then one day I realized that I was looking at it all wrong. Because the babies weren't going to wander off. That wasn't the problem. It was the sick SOB who was watching me, waiting for me to look away for just a second. And that's how the kids disappear. That's how kids get snatched, you see? So I never took my eyes off my kids again. And that, friends, I think, is where we are today in the Catholic Church. Malicious actors are coming for our kids. They're coming for our faith, for our Mass. They want to exterminate it. They want to end it. They're threatened by it, you see? So from their point of view, it doesn't really matter, you know, how many families go to your Latin Mass. In fact, that's a problem. You know, it doesn't really matter how long the processions are, because that's a problem for them. It doesn't really matter how many babies line the back walls of our churches, because for these SOBs running the Vatican, that's the problem. Now, we need to continue to show those videos, and we need to continue to tell, because again, the world is watching. So from the point of view of running a business or running a church or running anything, when you have thriving Latin Mass parishes all over the place, and we all have run our video cameras to prove that, yeah, show it to the world, because it helps expose the evil of what's going on inside the Vatican right now. Not all of them, but there are evil men calling shots inside the Vatican right now. And with your packed out church, you're the problem. And most importantly, your babies are the problem to these men. They're not shutting down your Mass because nobody is filling your church. They're shutting it down because your Mass, your church is packed out at the Latin Mass. And the Novus Ordo is on life support. And here's where it gets even worse. Do you know what? They know it's on life support. They're not seriously trying to save it, are they? Because they intentionally, the ones who called the shots a long time ago, they intentionally put even the Novus Ordo on life support. They're providing hospice care now. And that's the terrible thing that traditional Catholics discovered a half century ago, that this is intentional. They did it on purpose. It wasn't an accident. They declared war on the old church, the traditional church, the Church of Jesus Christ, as she has stood for 1,965 years, so that one day, in their minds, Christendom could be replaced by anti-Christendom. Call them Freemasons, call them modernists, call them globalists, it's all the same critter. And the sooner you come to realize that it's on purpose, the sooner you're going to come to realize what you need to do, right? And we as parents know this. We as laity know this. Thank God we have priests and bishops who are reaffirming us in this. What we need to do right now is keep the old faith no matter what, keep our children away from these guys, pray the rosary, go to underground masses for a time if we have to. If this final solution is more than rumor, we will do it. We've done it in the past. We will do it again. And the big challenge for us now is to resist the temptation to run out of our church on fire, which it is, to run out, leave the church because it's on fire for all the right reasons. Men are called to stay and fight the fire, friends. You gotta stay and resist. You gotta keep the faith. There's no place to go. This is our church. We need to reconquer her, reclaim her, until God delivers us. God will save the church. It's not our job. God will save the church, but we need to stay until he does. There's no other place to go. And if now times get tough, and if we as parents, as Bishop Sheen's laity, if on our knees at our little clandestine Latin masses in our basements, surrounded by our little kids running around with running beads through their little fingers, if that makes us the enemy, if that makes us the wake-up screaming nightmare for the Vatican, so be it.